Okay. The December 3rd, 2014 Clean Water Commission is called to order. We shall do a roll call. Yeah. Commissioner Rylander, here. Commissioner Schaefer?
Here.
Commissioner Carlson?
Here.
Commissioner Meyer?
Here.
Commissioner Breeden?
Here.
And Commissioner Rasmussen?
Here.
Not in attendance,
Rob McKinney.
Rob McKinney, who indicated by email that he was unable to attend, and
Melanie Weaver
is also unable to attend. She just sent, perhaps you saw the email, indicating a conflict. And of course, Mr. Brian Peck formally resigned his position last week, so that is to be filled. So, commission is now sitting at 8 members, with one to be filled.
Right, and just a footnote to all that, we've notified the Board of County Commissioners to fill that position. So they know all about it. Myself, Earl Rowell, Clark County.
Bobby Trusty, Clark County.
Audience.
And from our guests. Your name.
In your name.
Cameron.
Cameron, okay.
Right. Welcome.
Do you represent anybody, Cameron?
Or is it just you?
Just me.
Citizen at large. Okay. So the first item of business is to review the information packet. Earl?
Tonight's meeting is the one for December 3rd, the agenda. And your packet tonight also is the November 5th meeting summary. Also in tonight's packet is the materials that you'll talk about for what you guys are going to do in 2015. Then we're going to talk a little bit about appointments of Clean Water Commissioners. We'll see how that plays out after you talk about what you're going to be doing in 2015. Then there's this public outreach stuff I alluded to or talked about prior, basically at the last meeting, but we really didn't talk about it. I just handed it out. So I wanted you guys to go through it. We'll talk about that some more later. And then there's a summary. I'd like for you to read through it. Basically what the summary says is that we, Department of Environmental Services, applied to the Washington State Department of Ecology for about a $300,000 grant. And we're looking to do more capital projects as we go along. So we'll talk about that some more a little later. That's what's in your packet of materials for tonight.
Any questions about the packet this evening?
What is the date on the $300,000 grant requirement?
Yeah. If you continue, it's the last item in your packet of materials. So you should have something that looks like this. Your packet of materials.
Oh, I
did.
Okay.
Would everybody take a couple of moments and review the meeting summary from the November 5th meeting? And we'll see if there are any questions or comments or amendments or changes. And a second to approve the meeting minutes as they stand. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any dissent? Motion passes unanimously. So meeting notes are accepted as indicated. That opens us up for public comments. Since we have a guest in the audience, would you like to address the commission? And if so, please step up to the table. If not, that's fine.
I'm good for now. I might make some comments later.
Okay, we'll have a second session. So, since our only guest, then public comments are closed at this point. All right, let's move to item number 3, presentation, discussion, recommendation, actions. I'm going to walk through some material that we unfortunately couldn't get through on the last meeting. So let's try to address. In the documents you have, it's two-sided. I don't know if you had a chance to read it at the last meeting or between last meeting and now. Gary and I had some discussions, and this was sort of an outgrowth of those discussions, and I wanted to touch base and share these things with the commission. And talk about a little vision and philosophy, so a bit in this. We are all appointed at points outside of a normal calendar year, January through December being a normal calendar year. My appointment and I think Gary's appointment last year we occurred in February. Mike Bryan's is February. Are they all in February?
Yes.
That's okay. The way it is right now.
Okay. So, in the discussion that Gary and I had, the question was if the department, everything is really run on a calendar year basis, January through December, does it make sense to have the appointments for the commissioner positions such that when we start a new calendar year, we're not wondering whether people are going to be replaced if their term expires a couple of months into the year? So, for instance, Gary and I both come up in February. If the county commissioners choose not to reappoint us, then there will be some people to replace. Of course, Brian's takes place there. And my concern, personally, is that impacts either projects or programs or efforts. So if you aren't sure whether somebody's going to be there or they are there and you start in on something and then they aren't there, it's disruptive. So my thought was that it's worth discussing with you guys whether or not you think it makes sense for us to recommend to the county commissioners that they look at adjusting the appointment dates probably the fall, late October, November of a year, maybe even December, so that when we start a new calendar year, that we don't have to worry about people not being reappointed at those time frames. So that's sort of the first item. So I'm just going to throw that on the table. What do you think?
So your concern is primarily focused on lining up appointments or the period of the current appointments with projects that we're about to
discuss. Well, if the intent is, and I had some discussions with Earl on this as well, he can certainly chime in, the efforts of the county and the departments are generally, in essence, a calendar year, so it's January through December. That's the focus that they work on. If this commission has any project or projects that are going on, we just adopted, a couple of months ago, our potential project list for 2015. And we talked about having a target of 3 commissioners for each of the projects. Yet if some of those people aren't going to be there or aren't going to be reappointed and you're already partway into a new year, that's disruptive. To me, that's disruptive.
I'm curious how other commissions handle their appointment frequencies. And I'm not sure whether that has any...
I don't know if it has any bearing
on this. But
I can just speak from my personal experience. I have not really checked out other commissions, even here at the county, to see who does what, where, when, and why. So I can't really answer that question. Only thing I can say is that it really depends on the appointments. You know, even if we could keep the same agenda, the same calendar as we have for appointments, basically what we're doing now, we're running it from basically March through February, because that whole thing has kind of slipped a little bit. It used to be at the end of February, and we would run it all the way then through March, but we've gone to March, so now it goes backwards a little bit. So what we have is a situation where we can bring a person on board currently, and that person won't be in place officially until March 1, and then that person will position will expire 3 years thereafter on the 28th of February. That's what the current position is. So really, then because the question becomes one of, if we're going to do this and the board says no, they could say no anytime. Because there's always going to be 3 people that are going to always be up for election or appointment by the board. So it becomes a case of what people do the board want to keep on the commission and what people are they going to let go? And that can happen even...
Or who wants to re-up.
Is there any kind of ordinance that governs this?
No, the only thing that's in place right now, because we checked at all this stuff, because I went through a whole process of writing up a staff report and all this wonderful stuff, and I said, why are we doing all this? Because really what it is, it's a set of bylaws. It's your bylaws that we're looking at. And that was the thing I was going to say, you know, if we get to the item that I'm talking about, which I'm already looking at, is we're talking about modifications strictly of your bylaws. The only thing that's in code is that all of the members on the commission must have a 36-month period on the commission. So we were trying to figure out how do we shape that, how do we do that?
Well, there are three of us who will have only 12 months, you know, before our first commission appointment expires.
Yeah, but if you've already, right now, you, sir, both of you should have already applied back to the Board of County Commissioners, if you haven't already. For Commissioner Peck is gone, the board is going to start looking for somebody to fill that vacancy. So I would recommend, I think you've already.
I already did.
So I was, Commissioner Schaefer, I would recommend that you, if you haven't already, contact Jennifer Clark in the board's office and put together the same kind of application that you did in February or last year.
All right.
So the answer to your question is, I don't have an answer specifically to that.
I was actually just searching to see if there was a precedent or whether or not this would be a first. But I guess it goes back to our bylaws.
Because what you want to do, how you want to modify your bylaws is really the answer.
Well, and even in that case, if I understand correctly, it would be the recommendation to the county commissioners that this change occur.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't have to. If you modify the bylaws are your bylaws, they have nothing to do with the county.
You wouldn't have to go to the board.
No, it goes to you guys. You guys make up your bylaws.
Change it. They want to change it.
So, and then you can, literally, the way it works with the bylaws, you can make a modification to the bylaws today, but it won't go into effect until the next meeting. So
I guess, you know, what would be the downside of, other than it's changed, but other than that, what's, how about downsides?
It's a lot of time to make up your mind.
Well, I think that what, you know, their actions are pretty much set in concrete until the 28th of February of 2015. So what we would be looking at is whatever we would change for 2016.
I know one thing that needs to happen is you can't elect. I don't think you should put anybody in the position of chair or vice chair whose term
falls in a period
of you don't know if they're going to get reappointed. Yeah. That means us changing our bylaws to when we're going to put our chair and our vice chair into place.
Right, and one of the other things, if I may interject here.
That's the only thing I have.
Well, I know, because that's exactly what happened, and that's what I put in my staff report, basically. And I used that particular citing of, it was actually David Morgan was the vice chair, and at that time he was to back up the chair. And what I would advocate too is that, take two steps back here, the chair of this commission should always be the one who writes the annual report, and then anybody else that he wants to have support him should always have the ability to be there, and that they know they're going to be there. In this case, Mr. Morgan was one of the committee members to write the report, was taken off the commission. So basically,
and then the chair at the time
had to write the report.
Well,
pretty much.
Which I had to step in because Nancy resigned.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, when Dave and I were going to work on the annual report, and he needed to reappoint, which is fine. But I mean, I actually had a meeting with, you know, Commissioner Melke and Midor saying, look, you know, here's what you got to look at when you make appointments like this. A great group, totally supportive of it. But it's like, here's how disruptive it can be when you.
They didn't realize the impact of that.
Well, they didn't realize the impact. It's like here you got a person who just nominated for vice chair, and you write him off the board, which is fine.
Yeah.
But it was pretty disruptive to what we were trying to accomplish right at the time,
right,
which is generally the direction we were talking about. Things were coming.
Well, given that the effort, or I guess that generally the choices for chair, vice chair, whatever positions tend to occur late in the calendar year, so that you started the new year, and yet we fall into this February time frame when appointments may or may not occur. It just, to me, it just doesn't make any logical sense that it's that way. It just seems to me that when you elect your chair and vice chair, or you're planning any projects moving forward in the next calendar year, outside of somebody, you know, unilaterally resigning or having a health problem or, you know, something like that, it seems to me you need to get to that point in time late in the year where the appointments, if they're up for renewal, are done.
You know, David had a really excellent question, and I think it's been answered. You're saying, you know, is there a precedent or a standard process by which, I don't know how many commissions that we have, you know, a citizen advisory commission going. I think it's probably at least 10 or maybe...
There's about 50 of them.
50 of them, okay. 50 of them. So we were wondering, you know, is the Board of Commissioners trying to set a standard process to deal with all of these, or do they get a notification from the commission chair that, hey, I need a vacancy filled?
Well, the way it works is basically what we do as staff, that liaison to the board, or liaison to the department, and to you guys, we will say, we have a vacancy on this commission. Board of County Commissioners, Jennifer Clark, we need to start looking at filling that vacancy. And what they'll do is within a respectable period of time, they'll go out and advertise for a position, mm-hmm. and get recipients or applications for that position. And so what then they do is interview. They'll decide who they want, and then they'll interview those folks, and then they'll make a determination who they want to appoint.
You know, I would also like Commissioner Rylander, if he were to, you know, we have a skill set that we're looking for this vacancy that particularly healthy commissioners, you know, make us more productive. If you have a skill set, I would like somebody who has knowledge of this or that or whatever you think. I would like to find a way to maybe set in as a silent person in the corner, you know, maybe on an interview to see what kind of people we're getting, or some way to give the commissioners an idea of what it is you as a chairman are looking for to accomplish this year's task.
It would be what the committee's looking for, so.
Well,
Point taken.
But and also, if it is just a matter of the bylaws, I would like to suggest that, you know, we rewrite the bylaws and bring them up for a vote on the next meeting, so that we, you know, that way, you know, we have, if that's all it is, we are free and clear to, you know, proceed with 2016 without any of the issues that you talked about.
David, I don't know the answer to what other commissions do, other than, I can give you one other example, and I told Earl, I was here yesterday morning for an interview at 10 a.m. with the Civil Service Commission, not leaving this, but they have an opening, and they have five committee members, they have staggered, and they have been advertising, and it's my understanding from them, they're attempting to have that filled before the end of the year, That's only one other commission. So.
And so that is your ultimate desire, based on what you're saying here, is that you want to shift the process from having new candidates to the fourth quarter of
Correct.
The year.
Correct.
With your experience yesterday. So is that your recommendation then, that we move forward?
Well, I guess I'm suggesting to the group that, for your consideration, I'm suggesting it makes more sense, it's more logical, it is more uniform and less disruptive to make sure that people are in place and will be there as you're planning for the new year or the new projects or whatever else it is.
I can see your point. Jim's example was just spot on.
Yeah.
You know, to show how the...
Well, that my example is more directly related to nominations of chair and vice chair in relationship to term.
But it still fits.
Yeah,
we
had to move forward.
You don't want to lose an officer right in the middle of the year.
Yeah, we want to maintain that continuity of work. And in all honesty, I've never seen such a big turnover of the commission members. Have you, Earl? Do you recall anything like this?
Never.
So the largest percentage of folks on the commission were new. We've never experienced that before. So maybe this is a one-time deal.
And yet, I guess, is there a downside to making this type of shift?
The only thing is that there's not so much a downside, but there is a resolution that was written by County Administrator at the time. And then also, Bill Barron, and the intent that what they were trying to do is to ensure that when people are to be replaced on this commission, the Library Commission, and also at that time, the Board of Equalization group, they were talking about making sure that they have adequate time to get those people in, and they were talking about 120 days. So 120 days in the resolution. Then I saw a different report as of this year where they were talking about 90 days. So I don't know if that resolution got modified or what happened. But what they're saying, and the reason they're coming up with these resolutions or these ideas and the concepts, is that before all that, there was a lot of picking up people willy-nilly, if you will, and not going through a process of saying, there's you, and you, interview you, and you, and the other, and make a decision that way. So now they're much more determined to make a decision in a very,
sure,
in a little, very linear fashion. That's the only thing that's out there.
But Gary, to your point, any change will have to be folded in prospectively. I mean, in reality, as terms come up, then the process would have to be changed such that the proper notification period would occur at X point in time, so that the appointment became effective on X day and month. But sometime in that fourth quarter for that appointment to occur, so that, and to Jim's point, when the chair and the vice chair and whatever other positions are voted on, then you have a reasonable expectation.
So then as I hear you mention that, then we would institute this, so there would be a gradual process that as new terms come up and that new periodicity would start at the beginning of January, or end of December, would roll over to that new individual. So
you flesh it all out by the time, in this case, 2017.
Right, you're talking about changes by.
Yeah, there's no other way to do it, is there? I mean, you'd have to fold it in.
Yeah.
And so as the terms came up, but instead of being in February for renewal, they would move to, become effective November 1st or whatever what it turns out to be.
Well, what it would be, if we do a calendar year, they would become effective 1-1 at that particular year. And so, if you look at it, I tried to do a little back of the envelope calculation on the staff report thing I put together. But anyways, the bottom line is, from my perspective, we always have to make sure that whoever is on this commission gets 36 months worth of time, and maybe even a little longer, because we want to make sure we get everybody lined up properly.
Right.
So there might be a period of time where some folks may be 36 months and another 8 months to line it all up. So I don't know if that's fair or not, but if we're talking about lining it up and modifying it, that's what I see happening. And a lot of that wouldn't happen, like you're saying. At the very earliest, to line it up, we're talking about like the first of 2016.
Well, so I'm on the record by saying I don't really have any objections to this idea in advancing forward. I think maybe we do need to look into the resolution a little bit more, do a little bit more due diligence on that.
So the resolution is pretty straightforward. Not to interrupt you, but the resolution is pretty straightforward. It basically depends on what resolution you read and what information you get. You can get a resolution from 2006 that's 120 days, or you can get one for earlier this year that said 90 days. So I'll have to follow up on that.
Yeah, so I don't think that what we're talking about doing would necessarily be in any conflict with that.
Well, first of all, I don't understand what you mean by the resolution. Which resolution were you talking about?
Resolution that Earl was talking about.
Okay.
That had been introduced.
For the amount of time for advance notification.
Okay. But is there any reason why we can't look at taking a draft of the bylaws and what we're doing, and so that we can, it seems like Commissioner Landrieu that you practice. You're the one that come up, with this, and it's it's a great idea. That's the reason why you shared it with me. I thought that when I pulled it in, was that I think it's good proactive planning that we haven't really seen before in the previous bylaws. So why don't we take a project to rewrite the bylaws as a proposal to the board and go forward. Would you like a motion?
Well, it doesn't sound like we need to go.
It doesn't have to go to the board.
No. We're our board.
So I would have no issue at reviewing the bylaws to see if there are others that need to be changed. In this particular case, I'm suggesting.
Well, that would be a logical first step.
That we I don't think we have to go through all of the bylaws and potentially rewrite multiple bylaws if we're looking for some specific actions.
Well, here's.
We can just edit, can't we?
Yeah, exactly. What I tried to do with the bylaws, I just was toying around with the stuff, and I went back to the part for the chair, basically added to the chair portion of the bylaws. This would be commission organizations, blah, blah, blah. It talks about the role and responsibilities of the chair, and I just added to that. In addition to the chair is responsible for completing the annual report and then making sure that if the chair wants to add other members, that there are other members available for completing the report. And then what I said is to see what is the annual report portion. There is an annual report portion to this set of bylaws as well. And the annual report basically says in Section 8G, where it talks about the annual report work session shall be scheduled during the first quarter, scheduled with the Board of County Commissioners during the first quarter of the year. So
we'll get to that, the reporting in a second. So let me ask you, Susan, Virginia, any thoughts? Good, bad, indifferent, don't care? Great idea, bad idea?
Indifferent, that's a very good choice.
Yeah, okay.
It's not indifferent.
Okay.
Don't know about good or bad yet.
Okay. Susan?
I'm amenable to it. I think.
So should we perhaps, since there's no urgency that we have to have something done by it, is it appropriate to draft language to present at our January meeting?
I would endorse that.
So that people can read through it, we can digest it. Is that reasonable?
Yeah.
Yes. I wouldn't endorse that.
All right.
Motion. Can
you do that? Sure. Make a motion.
I guess you can't make a motion.
No, I wouldn't.
Okay. On the topic of amending the bylaws to address the periodicity of commissioner appointments. Mr. Commissioner Rylander will draft a modification to the bylaws and present at the next commission meeting.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Now, associated with that, and Earl was making some comments, one of the other topics was the timeliness of the annual report. In this particular case, this last year was presented in June to the county commissioners. Okay. And working on the assumption that one would attempt to focus on the calendar year, January through December appointments, but also working effort of this commission, then it would make sense to write a report at the end of a calendar year that could then be reviewed and completed in a fashion that it could be presented to the Clark County commissioners within the first quarter of the new year. If that makes sense. Okay. So what looks like has happened is over time it's drifted later. So by the time we get into June, then we're trying to figure out what projects are we going to be working on, and now we're really sort of tilted. So if we can get to the county commissioners, as early as possible in the new year with a completed report, thus any project changes or any activities or efforts are synchronized with what the commissioners want as early as possible so that we get the most out of our calendar year to do our work. Does that make sense? I'm sure I worded that terribly well, but that's sort of the intent. That so from a reporting standpoint, we would then try to have our report done by, in essence, if at all possible, the end of the year.
Well, we now have a group of people who are quite competent to do this, but we did it for some time, and there's a lot of foot dragging.
Well, I told her all this. I've already written a preliminary draft, very, you know, not detailed, but a draft report for the work that was done up through June when that was presented, and then what little stuff occurred after June through the end of the year. So it's nothing spectacular. And so I would be certainly be prepared to work with collectively all or selectively people who had an interest. Email is a wonderful tool. And if so, then we could sort of work on trying to get that report put together and get something that we're comfortable with, whoever's working with me, and then I'd certainly like to circulate it to the group as well, such that when we come to our January meeting, that we can do a formal review and make sure that everybody's comfortable, that we've got everything covered. If that makes sense to you.
Yes, I'm one of the worst foot draggers, too.
Well, in my early years, I was probably a poster child for people who put things off till tomorrow.
Procrastination?
Yes. And over the years, I got tired of being that way, so I changed. So I actually probably have gone too far the other way. But in any case.
Help you if there's specific content.
Okay.
I'm willing to help you
around. I'm happy to circulate in general, or if there's just certain people, ladies, who you want to see the early draft as well?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Then we'll circulate, and I will get it out to you by the end of the week that I've played with so far. Let me ask you sort of a technical question. Email's okay, I assume. Does everybody use Word, or do I need to do have some other choice of software?
If they don't use Word, they can use Google Docs.
Okay, or just a side note, I'm a computer geek. You can download for free a product suite called LibreOffice, LibreOffice. It's totally free. And it has all of the same things that Microsoft does. So it has an equivalent for Word, Excel, PowerPoint, et cetera. It's excellent.
Will it display off
Microsoft? It'll read every Microsoft document, and you can choose to save it in any Microsoft document format you want. It's called L-I-B-R-E, Office, one word, LibreOffice.
L-I-B-R-E.
R-E. And then the word Office, all one. So just in case. So I always tend to save it in a Word format because it can be read, and that software will read it. So if you don't have the Microsoft products, you can still do exactly the same thing. It's a great little suite, and the price is terrific. I love free stuff.
Yes, email's okay with me.
Email, is that all right?
Anybody else have a problem?
Okay, and within any changes you make within the document, there's actually a change function if you'll just look, and then you can type whatever you want. Or put notes and comments for you. So if we can circulate and just stay on top of that. So just so you know, then my goal is to have that wrapped up by the end of this month so that it is ready for further review and discussion at our January meeting, if that's okay.
Just while you guys were discussing, just so you know, I went through the other advisory boards, and a majority of them do end in December. A few of them end in September. But ours is the only one that ends in February. So you know.
And a little history of why it ended in February, because we started this program in 2000, 2001. So we started January 1 of 2000. We couldn't go backwards. And we needed some time to find out applicants to be on the Clean Water Commission, and that pushed us into February and we've been continuing that cycle ever since. So that's why you see this February timeframe.
Well, I think it's probably moot now that we've kind of had a discussion and resolution to resolve, to revise the bylaws and make that presentation. When we get it back, it's probably I have another item I'd like to discuss if we're finished with that one.
Yeah, almost. But yes, we are, but I handed out a little half sheet for everybody.
Yes.
And I sent you an email, and so by the end of this meeting, for those who are in attendance, if at all possible, if you could fill that out and maybe give it back to me, and then we'll figure out where people would prefer to participate based on the projects that we currently believe to be active and in need.
Can we have a discussion about this?
Absolutely.
Regarding the Clean Water Program fee study, which of course I led the task force on, Earl, could you give us any indication as to what timeline the department is looking at to
I thought there was a motion at the last meeting to have something available back to this group January. So that's what we'll be looking at.
Okay. And then I guess on that basis, then we'll actually get a real read as to how much more participation will occur or not in that particular
Well, I think there's two facets of that question. I got this memo from Don Benton that I shared last meeting. It says, thank you for your hard work. Please thank David and the others for their hard work. I've asked the Clean Water Manager to take a look at the committee and has done and incorporated where possible into our research efforts. I'm not sure, as you may know, some of the recommendations are not practical within our current budget constraints. So we not only have a question of, you know, when that information is going to be available, but what part of what we made suggestions on, you know, what you wrote with your flowchart, what part is not practical within our current budget constraints.
Well, I would expect that that's going to be what we're back from them on in January.
Okay. So, I hope so. But I just wanted to bring that up. That is two facets.
Well,
number one is when, and number two is what's being deleted. So, but in the end, it's moot because we're going to, you know, the Department of Environmental Services is going to come up with a data package that justifies the fees, you know, the lawsuits, the maintenance costs, the other facets that are in there, including, the solid waste cleanup costs and things like that. So whatever they provide is whatever they provide that we will use as a basis to go on to our drafting of our forum presentations. And so, I still, though, Don was awfully, gray about what it is we're doing and how much. Right. So,
we'll start it.
I found out I can get just about anything out of Don if I buy a bunch of Gustav's.
That's the trick.
I said I can get about anything out of Don if I just offer to buy a bunch of Gustav's over on 164th.
Oh, I don't know.
No, okay.
Well, if you buy me a lunch, you can get anything out of me, too.
There you go. Now, there was one other item on the bottom of the second page, and that was the topic of commissioner participation. Rob McKinney actually commented in his email, everybody remembers seeing that one of his comments was that we discussed having a commission member participating in a project. And his comment, I believe, and I'm paraphrasing here, was it sounded fine to him, but that he thought that if we were going to make that any sort of requirement, that obviously we needed to discuss it, we needed to make a motion, and we probably need to amend the bylaws. So I just want to put that out on the table. Do we want to formalize a requirement that a commission member participate in a project or not? Or do you want to leave it loose?
Well,
I can see pros and cons, but I just wanted to toss that onto the table. So, in this case, we have currently defined three projects. We have nine commission slots, and ideally, each person would be on one of those three.
Maybe all nine would go ahead and be on just one.
What'd you say?
All nine would rather be on just one of the projects.
That would be a one-person committee.
Don't the bylaws already have some language in there about expectations as far as participation?
Attendance at meetings.
I would vote just to leave it loose. I mean, we're all adults here, and the reason we're sitting here is because we want to participate.
Well, there's some amount of expectation that comes with your appointment that you put in the work.
Sure.
I don't know if that needs to be formalized or not.
I say leave it loose.
Yeah, I say leave it loose.
I agree with Gary. Everybody came down here and put in their application to be part of it. You know, they put some effort toward there, so.
Consensus, nothing needs to be formalized beyond what currently exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure it was brought up and that we addressed it. I think, other than some personal thoughts on priorities and focus and vision, that's just reading material. There's nothing that needs to be attended to, I believe, specifically to any of that, unless anybody disagrees.
What's that on? Which ones now?
The comments on priorities and focus and project expectations, those were just my thoughts. I didn't intend that there be any action taken or it just...
Didn't through it though, but you know, the one thing that caught my attention, our job is not to create policy or provide direct oversight. I agree with it provide the direct oversight. I do think that some of the things that we need to be working on is creating policy by doing some of these projects that we do down, which we feed back to the Board of County Commissioners, which change policy. So I
sure
think that
influence.
I think that we are policy. That's part of what we should try to do is help create policy. Just an opinion.
So with that, I would say go back to your last meeting, where I went through what are the responsibilities of this group.
Ooh.
So for Jim and anybody else who wasn't here last time, I would strongly encourage you to go back to the staff report that was done at the last meeting, where I talked about what are the roles and responsibilities of this commission. And in that, I talked about there's a whole paragraph of what the roles and responsibilities are for this commission. But I tried to boil it down to three areas. One is basically program service levels, looking at financing, looking at policy on surface and stormwater issues, looking at recommendations for creating incentives through services which may be necessary to adjust the fee. Well, we can't really adjust the fee because we don't have a lot of money. But what we can do is make recommendations of people who are doing good work. I think that's important. So, and the other thing is the annual report. And in the annual report, it talks about a plan for the upcoming year, evaluating the effectiveness of the program in the preceding year, and looking at revenue and summaries of budget. This group has not ever really talked about revenue or budget. So that's one of the things you guys might want to start thinking about.
Wait a minute. That's not true.
Well,
when we had when Director Benton was sitting right here, mm-hmm. when we talked about reviewing and approving the proposed stormwater fees.
Yeah. Let me go ahead.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
Okay, well, that was part of budget and finance and they were looking for our input, and we approved that and
yep.
sent it up to the Board of Commissioners.
Right.
So I disagree that we...
Well, what I'm referencing is the 2013-14 budget. You guys are talking about the 15 and beyond budget.
Well, okay, I didn't, you know, it said budget,
yeah.
so that's what I
don't, I kind of agree with Earl. I don't recall having a real meaningful, in-depth discussion on the budget.
But I really, in talking with both Commissioner Medora and Commissioner Melky. They are looking for us not to just be a process or a rubber stamp kind of a thing. They're looking for meaningful suggestions on how we can collectively work doing our little part of our niche to move the county forward. They welcome all suggestions. They may not take the suggestions, but they welcome them. And I think that if we see an opportunity, we should provide that to them to make their job. I mean, they can't think of everything all the time, all at once. So I do think that they value whatever input we have, and we'll consider it and take their own view on whether or not they want to incorporate it or not. But I do think they appreciate what we provide to them.
So anyways, I'm just giving you an overview of what was talked about, staff report, and then that staff report, I hope we still have an extra copy for you, Jim, but it was quite a lengthy staff report with a lot of attachments. And a lot of the attachments materials that I had are things that came off the web page. So if you go to the website and you look at the website, you'll find stuff about stormwater permits, updates about what's happening in the program, and then also there's information in here that talks about, you know, what are the aspects of the program from giving this commission some basically staff reports and program summary information. So you can take a look at that summary information and you'll see what are the actions and activities that are occurring this year in this program. So you don't have to think too hard. Just go to that material and you'll find a lot of that answer there. And there's also other stuff that you might want to add to that as well.
Are you suggesting an expansion of the 2015 program activities?
I'm not suggesting anything. All I'm saying is that the information that I provided in here is basically the information that has to be talked about in the report, so you have a good understanding of what transpired this year. And I don't know if all of you really have that. I'm just being very honest here. So people who haven't been here for a while probably don't. So, and that's what I mentioned too when I gave this presentation, that there are people here who have been here for quite a long time who have a lot of rich history with this program and maybe not understanding all of the subtleties of it. So that's all.
Okay, the other item, this formal item that's on, is the public outreach program. And Earl will walk through that. And then following that, we'll see if there are any other topics that the commission members would like to bring up.
So the public outreach portion is stuff I mentioned at the last meeting, and you'll find it in your packet. Basically, what there is there's a statement on the front, a little summary sheet. And the intent is to, I think we've alluded to it already tonight, and that is to basically, when you go out to the public and start presenting information or talking about this program in any way, shape, or form, there's this other sheet, and this sheet here provides an opportunity to hear comments from the public that you're talking to. So if you're going out to a coffee class or you're going out to an association or some kind of meeting of partners or what have you, you have a good opportunity to present your information, and then you also have an opportunity to hear what they're saying. And then the flip side, if you turn it over, literally the flip side, is did we get back to them? Did we answer their questions? So I can say, I have this knowledge firsthand, that we don't go back to people. We go and talk to people, we hear what they have to say, but we don't really answer their questions. And so it's important that if we're going to talk to people and we're going to say, we hear what you're saying, we're writing it down, and we'll get back to you. And if you don't have the answer in your hip pocket, that's okay. You can just say to them, I don't have the answer right now, but I'll check with staff or I'll check with somebody, and we'll get back to them.
Mm-hmm. Is there any guidelines or topical straitjackets on, I mean, we're not talking about, are we going to move our program to Seattle and implement it in Clark County also, and not Clark, but I mean King County also. I mean, is there any topical limitations on the questions that we're asking them? I mean,
no, I think what's important is...
Is this world peace?
Well, we're not going to...
Hold it, you're Sandra Bullock.
I think that really the answer is, it depends on the group you're talking to. Living in the past, what we provided was canned presentations for people. And that worked for some groups. It didn't work for everybody. They were basically PowerPoint presentations. And then we were seeing people modifying it. And we're saying, well, really don't want you to spend your time modifying it. The time presentations, either you use them or you don't. If you want to make your own presentations, work with one person did and went out and started talking, but it wasn't about the clean water program. It was about basically environmental health in general.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be sticking back with the clean water program or the MPDES permit.
I mean, is it? Do you have any questions, or do you have any questions on what we just talked about?
Is that an answer a question, or I'm not sure what you're saying?
Oh, I said, I think he's alluding to a presentation. If you've given a presentation
and
you solicit questions, I would presume that it's what we've just talked about.
What are you presenting?
Yeah, I will, whether or not they presume the same thing, I think, is one of my questions.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I presume that what you're starting to talk about here, given that public outreach and education is one of the three topics that we've selected for this next year, that there will be time spent early on, especially for those of us that are new to the board and don't have that history of seeing public education events actually happening. That in the early phases, that we will have an opportunity to kind of frame what our messaging would be and talk about various different approaches, who key stakeholders might be that we want to reach out to, and then go forth.
I think that's a good summary. I think, again, go back to that one section in the code that talks about your roles and responsibilities, and then you can speak firsthand about what you're wanting to present.
When we get the final mix of people that are going to participate in each of the programs, just from a vision standpoint, and I don't want to assume too much. I use that old acronym, you know, but assume takes it out of you and me. So, but, yes, well, keep it relative thing. My presumption is that each of those working teams will talk, get together, or on the phone, whatever works out, and they will be responsible for defining what exactly they're going to do and framing it and what their goals are and what they need to do. So, for instance, the team that will potentially be reaching out to speak, then I'm guessing that they will get together and figure out, working with staff, what type of presentation or presentations, and put those together so that they're packaged and that they can go out.
Yeah, they have that. I mean, there's boatloads of presentation material. I've gotten boxes of boatloads when we were doing presentations. So there's plenty of stuff that you can go out there and tailor and grab and tailor to your audience. It's actually kind of designed that way to be tailored to your audience. So you pick your audience. My audience was watershed stewards. And that's where Nancy and Art and I went every time that they had their new classes set up. And we presented to them and we gleaned information from them. And we also did the Hazeldale Businessmen's Association. So we did it. I mean, we were in a neighborhood association too. So there's a ton of information. I mean, come down here, grab it, take a look at it. And then you can, as you find your potential group of people who you want to do public outreach to, it's pretty easy to tailor. I mean, I kind of work right on my feet most of the time, but
probably the key then is to stick with the material, organize it in the right fashion, and not necessarily create new material.
I wouldn't create new material
or change
so much material.
Well, you also don't want to misrepresent.
Wait a minute, though.
It's imperative you know your audience and what they're looking for. Because we had one big bomb with the garden club.
Yeah.
It was a bomb.
Boom.
It was a bomb.
Yeah, they weren't interested in what
we
were
doing. We did not meet their expectations, and we were way off track of them. So, just a word of warning.
Learning experience.
Yes.
Yes, it was.
Gary?
Yeah, my perception now that what the Board of Commissioners were asking us for was support of clean water fees and also collection of, you know, county residents' concerns about clean water environmental issues. Like, we had a list of 10 different you know, projects initially, and one of the comments we had was that a lot of that will, those projects will, although that information will be covered when we receive our questionnaires and see what the public really, you know, what information they really desire. So first of all, it was to support and inform the public of what the components are that make up the stormwater fees, and you know why they're being changed and why they're charging what they're charging. The commissioners were asking us for that, and then the second part, of course, was the questions and answering the questions and such.
Jim,
I have a comment. So when we went down to the Hazel Dell Businessmen Association, it was fairly interesting that we went down there, and of course I've worked with some of these people in different aspects, but when it came down to the fee, honestly, these guys, and these are all business guys, and they said, I don't know, why don't you raise it if it's not covering the cost? I mean, it was explained, this is an enterprise. So it was, the major amount of resistance was because of the Board of County Commissioners didn't feel politically that it would be to the benefit to raise any type of fee, especially during the economic climate and everything like that. But that wasn't really a lot of real world, this is where you find things on public outreach when you do it, on actually how do people feel
sure.
about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually kind of a non-issue for a lot of people, all right? Which was
well
kind of surprising, but it wasn't a huge surprise.
In this case, it is an issue because we have some controversial things. Number one is the explanation of the lawsuits, the explanation of why they wanted to charge a solid waste fee, like the newspapers, you know, sold a penny a newspaper or something like that, whatever it was. But finally, it got rejected. But there was, you know, there was now, you know, we're in a point where it's not, you know, we're forced to raise the fees because of so the lawsuits and the increasing environmental regulation of the state and federal government and things like that. So they don't really have a choice. They're just wanting, you know, us to explain that so that the public understands why they don't have a choice.
Understood, but that's only half of the issue. One of the reasons that we have to raise the fee or had to raise the fee, and you can put the lawsuit out there, sure, that's bucks, I get that. But we never addressed as we needed the increases in infrastructure put in, as the county grew, the system grew, okay.
Didn't keep up.
It never kept up, mm-hmm. All right? So then you throw on, okay, we've got, and this is the over-the-top, part of the over-the-top, but we were falling behind before the new MPDS permit came out, before the lawsuit. The idea of the lawsuit was, hey, we're going to fight this battle, and we're going to prove that what we're doing
is better, or does
what it's supposed to do. Hey, it was an executive decision what was made. It was a mistake. It's going to be water under the bridge pretty quick. That's because public's remembrance of this is going to be pretty short. What they need to do, this is my opinion, is first you got to explain to them, here's what I've found. I've done a lot of outreach with people. First, you got to get it out of their heads that is a mosquito pond, okay? You got to get them out of that and have them understand how our system works, why it costs the money that it does, and you know it's dictated by the MPDES permit. A lot of it on how we deal with our stormwater runoff. But our system, people don't even know. They think if it goes down the drain, it's going into the sewer. They don't understand.
They think it's going in a fifth treatment facility.
They don't understand that we have a MS4 system. Opposed to a combined system. These are things that need to be explained and why the infrastructure had, you know, here's what the cost is. And here's the benefit of putting in a great, you know, into a great system is because, you know, you got to have clean water. just drive around all the developments we're going on right now. And that's where I get back into my swamp thing. And I did talk when we talked about, we had discussion with, I talked to a few different developers on it from Battleground area who deal inside Battleground and inside the county and how they have to deal with stormwater and the changing environment that they struggle with all the time. But going back on the outreach thing in there, it's like these people, most of the people he will go out and talk to don't understand the basics of the system. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that there's 800 and some or 900 and some private facilities, 900 and some public facilities, a bajillion miles, however many it is, of conveyance ditches put around. And you start explaining that to people, to audiences in there, and they start to, a lot of them will start to actually grasp that, wow, that is a big project, and that the Clean Water Fund is an enterprise fund, and as such, sits by itself. And this is the good thing, this should be a plus on the government side of things, as far as I think. It's like, hey, this money goes directly into this fund. We can't steal from other places in here. We have to make this fund whole. So now we have great transparency in what the costs are, where the money goes. You know, if you start presenting like that, I believe, and you have that data provided by the county, it's explainable.
Jim is right. How long ago was that meeting at that fire station in Kalida?
Eight years ago. Yeah,
and that was, yeah, and that group was receptive to raising the fee. But I'll tell you, if you go up to North County, you're going to get a different audience. You're going to get a different reception on that, because there's landowners to this day that don't think that a farm forestry family should be paying a dime.
Because they look at their land as receiving lands.
Yeah.
And that they're actually, their properties are actually cleaning the water.
Yes, and because,
the air.
But those folks are also dealing, you know, with massive buffers along stream banks that nobody in town is dealing with.
Right.
Well, Westland is kind of strong.
But you know, I think, Susan, that's where we get the feedback. And we try and answer our best to answer their questions. Every group, I think, that we present to will be a little different or a lot different.
Oh, yes.
And so I think that's where, you know, like I said, we take the feedback and we get back to them and, you know, get an answer for them and do our best to be good servants.
And, I can see where after we, you know, get the fee situation under control and get some honest suggestions developed and then take them out to the public, there's going to be a massive education effort.
That's what I heard, Jim. What I heard was a lot of background education setting the stage for you. So that people understand the core, because if they don't have that, then you can't answer their questions about why are you spending this or why are we charging that.
Right. They don't, it doesn't, it just will never, it doesn't compute. It just looks like you just charge me an X amount more money for what?
Yeah, I'm getting nothing.
Yeah, they're not seeing the value for their money. Nothing, anything tangible that they're getting.
So the group that is going to focus on that sounds like we'll have a great time working with staff, working through the material to come up with a or maybe several presentations, strong educational component background, etc.
Bear in mind too that even for the stormwater fee preliminary recommendations, we have recommended that there be a public outreach component.
Sure, that's right.
As well.
No, sure. There has to be.
I really hope that Phil will start filling the room a little bit when we have these meetings.
Bring some friends.
Well, when you start talking about money, this room will be full of people.
Yeah.
But hopefully the public outreach component will, you know, fuel some people's interests and passions, and we'll see some more participation from the public.
One thing I may interject is that what we did when we first started this program years ago, we would try to get people who are like-minded, who understand what we're talking about, and then have them go out. So it's not just you guys. Talk to your partners. Talk to your friends. Get them to start talking. And have them go out and talk to people. So you have people who understand the program, or at least have the essence of what this program is all about. This is going to be North County people, yourself and your friends that are North County people. Get them to understand it's not looking just strictly at the buffers. When we recognize that, because we see as staff that there are a variety of regulations on people in the rural area, and we don't want to dismiss that. But we also recognize as staff that as this program goes forward, and as the Board of County Commissioners have already done, they have adopted a lower fee for the rural area than they have for the urban area. So you'll have a $2 increase in the urban area, you'll have a $14 increase in the rural area, you'll have a $2 increase, and in the urban area, you'll have a $14 increase. So try to look at it from that perspective. Because when somebody, I've done this too, I've gone out to doing presentations, and I go out to the rural area, and they go, it's those people back in Vancouver, they're all the problem. And you go to the Vancouver people, no, it's those people out in the North County, they're pouring oil everywhere, or whatever, and you're chopping down the trees. So everybody is part of the problem, and everybody's part of the solution. But what I'm saying is that as we go forward as a group, or as a thing called the Clean Water Program, make sure you have people that can support you, too. I think that's very important to say. So.
I think that we have some interesting opportunities. I hope people are at least mildly excited about some things that we can accomplish in 2015. Not only that our value to us make us feel good about the effort and time that we're putting in, but are valuable to the public as well.
I think if you can go back to, I think Jim is sort of headed on the head there. People need to look at stormwater, rainfall, as a benefit to the community, not as a detriment to the community. Oftentimes people look at it and they say, oh, the water just goes down that drain. Okay, it's gone. One of the things we have to educate people to is to say, what are you doing as a citizen to impact that water? And in the urban area, people throw the trash out. That gets back to what we were talking about in that subcommittee, where we're saying, where does the trash go? Where does it come from? What's happening there? And so with all that, then we come back and say, this is what we see happening. So that'll be part of that report that we're looking at. The other part of it is, what are people doing throughout the entire county? And I had a guy once tell me, he goes, I'm not associated with anything that goes on in the county. I go, okay. Do you drive?
You're not what?
He has nothing associated with anything that goes on in the county. So I said to him, okay. And he goes, I'm not paying the bill. I go, don't pay the fee. We're not saying you have to pay the fee. If you don't pay the fee, there'll be a lien on the property, there'll be penalties and interest, and you'll wind up paying a bigger bill. And he didn't see the rationale for having any kind of fee. So I said to him, where do you get your mail? Where does the mail come from? Where does it go? It goes down a highway. He goes, okay. I said, well, what about your neighbors? What are they doing? Are they putting chemicals or oils in their... He has a well system. I said, are they putting chemicals or oils on their property that might impact your well? He goes, okay. He still didn't like the fee, but he could have an understanding of why, appreciation for why we're trying to do this. And that's the kind of stuff that I think is important for people to understand. Because he was a tough cookie, I tell you. He didn't want to pay anything. And I don't even know if he's paying today. But I can say that at least we have justification for why we're doing what we're doing.
Everybody has an impact.
Yes.
So. Our water.
But you know, you'll have people who just will vehemently say no. And that's their prerogative. That's my two cents.
I would prefer clean water. But for my grandkids as well.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. To me, it's the lifeblood of this community, so we'll leave it at that.
For
the future.
In the book discussion this morning, that we had read the book, The Sixth Extinction. It's actually a conservation book. And it talks about what the human people today are going to cause the extinction of Earth. For the sixth one. And there's all these things we're talking about here, the people. Mm-hmm. They don't know they're doing what they're doing.
We
have to tell them.
this last year, especially in the Midwest and the East, we had actual environmental riots on warming. I mean, there was some temperatures in the mid and the East that were well over 100 degrees, 110, 100 or more degrees over a quite period of time. We had riots, and I think that those are, it's going to have some political impact because they'll be using that information against whoever's running for office next time. But it all is, like Jim said here, what are we doing for our grandchildren and great-grandchildren?
Thanks for that.
Jim was thinking of. All right, are there any other topics not listed on the agenda that anybody wants to bring up? Any other comments from any commission members? No? Then we have a second opportunity for a public comment, and we do have a guest. We'll give him a second chance.
All right. Well, I was agreeing with what Jim was saying over here about needing to educate people on what it is you guys actually do. So I had never heard of you really before today. Mm-hmm. You're about the only one. And I, you know, most people, I've taken several environmental classes and stuff like that. If you ask them what happens with their water or anything, they have no idea. It just goes in the ground and stays there. Something happens to it. And they don't know what the heck goes on. So, I agree with you guys. You need to educate people. I mean, specifically towards area, like rural and urban, because they have different ideas about what they're doing. So I agree with you guys on that.
Are you a rural or urban?
I live in Dallas, so I'm rural.
Rural environment.
Except if you're in the city, then you're urban. No,
I'm not sure. Rural environment. So you're going to Clark Park College, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You're taking this in class. So you could provide, us an audience? Or if we were going to put a presentation together,
I could talk to the teacher and tell him. I mean, he tried to get everybody to do civic involvement at some meeting. I guess nobody else sat in on this one.
We have a problem too.
Well, I can tell you.
I hear that you were in environmental health.
Yes.
I can tell you right now, there was a group of people about 4 or 5 years ago from Clark College, and they filled up the back rows, and I think their professor was with them, and they had a lot of questions, and they said the exact same thing you said. No one knows about this group. So even after that professor left and went back to the college, and I don't know if it's the same professor that you have, I don't recall his name, but he sat there with you, not with you, but with 10 of you and himself, and they peppered this group with a lot of questions.
I don't know what happened with that one, but it's... The one I have is the new structure.
I have quite a couple questions for you. So, your understanding of our stormwater system on really between 1 and 5, five being, I've got a pretty good knowledge, pretty good feeling, 1 being low, where would you put it?
Mine's very low still.
Okay.
I'm at 3. I've taken classes, but it doesn't really, they don't go into detail. Very much. They say, well, farms, they have pesticides, they go in the ground, they go to the rivers. That's pretty much, they don't go into depth on what really happens or what you guys do with your, you said there was like 900 facilities, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not very far off. That's public.
And private
too. Which, and that includes conveyance and everything else. So I got one more question for you, maybe a couple more questions for you on it. So, if when we're looking for an audience, all right, because we need to spread the word, right? We got to spread the word. That's our job, spread the word on what's going on here. So if we provided you a knowledge base and it made sense, okay, would that be something where, say, you would, if people ask you questions about that, would be something you'd spread the word? Obviously, you have some interest in environmental science. You're taking it right now. I mean, if we found 500 of you, right, and we presented to you, and we got the message across clear and concise and something you could digest and understand, would that be something you think that you would share with other people when somebody came up to you and said, oh man, look at that stupid mosquito farm?
Yeah, I think that people like me would share with others, you know.
If you're our future.
How many people in your class?
No pressure though. My class?
No pressure.
About 20-ish.
20-ish.
And it was a lot of the people up in North County would never show up to anything like this.
See, I'm right.
They care less?
Yeah. I mean, there is people up there that do care.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that there's not. But I know quite a few people that don't.
Sure.
You think that the audience for this type of discussion in clean water is more urban focused?
Well, I mean, I guess a little bit. I think you need to outreach into rural areas and try to get some more of them. Because
mm-hmm.
They're affecting it too. It's not just urban.
The attitude is different. You're right.
You need to get the information for at least this program and some other programs, maybe a little more spread out so that people know about it.
Right, we need to get it out. You know, here's an interesting thing I appreciate being. I'm a rural guy. I live inside an urban growth boundary, but I got livestock and dump trucks and tractors that leak sometimes and things like that that I try to take care of better today than I did before. But, so, Lacus Lake, you know where Lacus Lake is? I've never been there. It's out of camps. I'll just tell you a quick little story about Lacus Lake. So anyway, Lacus Lake has always been fairly polluted. And the original pollution on it actually came from livestock, cattle. Sticking cows. Beef prices.
I beg your pardon.
But the Lacus Creek is all eroded and everything. This is rural landscape, okay? And the cows go back and forth across. I was friends with a lot of farmers. We hunted out there quite a bit, bird hunting, ducks mainly. So that created a lot of the problems with going into Lacus Lake from Lacus Creek. So now it's become urban, all right? So the urban guys, what they do is they put fertilizer all over their lawn, right? Nitrogen and phosphorus. So they eliminated one problem, kind of cleaned that up, made it a little bit cleaner, and then the urban environment, I mean, the guy's running the livestock across here, thinks he's doing no harm. The guy's fertilizing his lawn thinks he does no harm. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the keys is on education. It's like, you know, here's the cause and effect of what's going on here by what your practices. You're not following best management practices for your process, whatever you're doing, cattle or making a green lawn. There are management practices that can improve the stream health and be a protected farm and have a fairly green lawn. But it's increasing the information and knowledge what you have to deal with.
Well, it's also awareness. Like in the urban area, many people think that the water that runs down the street and runs into the storm drain goes into a water treatment plant. And it doesn't. It just is dumped into the streams. And so you have all these people concentrated, you know, fertilizing their lawn and pesticides and all kinds of stuff in there in a concentrated fashion. And that just goes right straight into the streams. It doesn't go to a water treatment plant. Like most people have that perception.
It's a different style of water treatment plant. It's a stormwater facility.
Well, okay.
That's part of the box.
It goes down in the water grid down there by the.
That's what most people think. It's got the big pond skimmer running around.
Yeah.
Pump it out in the river.
It's not true. It goes into the streams.
Well, I have to say that my 20 acres is filtering the properties for, well, there's three, four of them on slopes.
So, Virginia, you should actually be charging them a fee.
Yes,
to bring
a clean water fee, absolutely.
A sub-clean water
bill.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, any other comments or suggestions for us?
So that was my main comment there.
Okay.
Girls, can I
ask,
what was the outcome of that lady with the complaint?
What happened was...
Well water.
Let me wrap up. So,
okay.
No other public comments?
No.
Good. The public comments section is...
Can you pronounce your last name for me?
Lundy,
okay.
Thank you. Back to the commission. Earl.
The question was asked about Grimstad. What we said at the last meeting of this group, that a staff person will go out and talk to her. So we had a staff person go out. Chris Clifford went out and talked to her. And looked at a variety of issues. Her issues were basically a claim about water rights, claim about buffers, a claim about septic system impact, looking at concerns about whether or not stormwater will impact her property, and then also looking at construction of lots in and around her site. And then there's also a review back in 2006 by a county hearings examiner, who's an independent person, not associated with the county, but that's what they call a county hearings examiner. And what he had said, based on all the information that he had collected, this is the hearing examiner now, he said that she has a senior water right, but that water right is not perfected. And what they mean by perfected, it's not a legal water right. It's
really?
Business.
You're kidding.
So one can have a senior water right, but if they don't get it perfected, which was kind of a new term for me, then it's not a standing water right. What she can do is she can basically work with the partners in that area to resolve those issues. And then also, she has to go back to the Department of Ecology and see if she can get a perfected water right.
Oh, I hope she does.
Well, not necessarily, because water rights are very hard to come by. And what she has in her area is a very shallow well, which was basically constructed back in the early, I can't explain exactly the date.
30?
At least 30 years old.
I thought it was 1930s or
something. But the bottom line is she has a very shallow well, and the water is coming not from just her area. The storm water is coming from a hillside above her. And so
that's feeding her well.
That's feeding.
It wasn't a real well, was it?
No, it's basically a shallow ditch is what it is.
Yeah.
So
it's surface water.
It is. It's basically a surface water system. So what's happening is that for her particular situation, she doesn't have a real water right. She's just taking water from that area. And the people who have well are using that same well. What they do, they take the water and use that for irrigation of their property and for livestock. They don't drink from it. So the question becomes one of, is it really safe to drink?
Is it potable water?
Is it potable water? And then the question becomes one of, is it going to be a long-standing system? What happened was, she has a well, this really shallow well, they call it a well.
Probably originally hand dug.
Could have been, who knows.
Yeah, they were.
And so anyhow,
spring even, maybe.
Well, what it is that the well's shallow, there's a pipe going down this intermittent stream, and it comes from the stream, from the well through the stream, and then goes underground, and then it goes to her property and to the adjacent property. The adjacent property, again, uses it just strictly for irrigation purposes and for livestock. She uses it for watering the property and for drinking water purposes.
That's her domestic water.
Girl?
Yes.
Does she have any recourse if her partners or
Well, the recourse she has is basically she needs to go to the State Department of Ecology and see whether or not she can get a perfected water right. And I don't think Ecology is going to do that. That's at least my understanding. Because she has also had talked with folks at the State Department of Ecology, and they basically told her that it's not going to get perfected. And as far as working with the neighbors and stuff like that, because one of the things I was talking with Chris, just sort of side conversation, we share a cubicle and office area. And so I was saying, can she work with maybe the neighbors to see if they can resolve it that way? It really depends, because right now she's a very vocal person and has made a lot of statements.
And that's putting it mildly.
And so so my understanding is that it's bumped all the way up to the commissioner's office, and there's a person in the commissioner's office is now actively working with her as well. And also I think, don't quote me on this, but I believe one of the commissioners is working with her too. So, you know, it's going to be one of those situations where it's a kind of a heated battle, if you will, and there's claims that the county needs to resolve this for her, but we don't really have any situation or ways to do that because we're not really associated with it. This is strictly a water rights issue and working with land use people to get that done.
So she should almost drill, if she's going to use a well, drill a real well.
Well, that's my question. Does she, is that permitted? Would she be permitted to drill a
well? I can't really say that. I don't have the information to say that. But all I can say is that she would have to get, again, another perfected water right. And then if she drills a new well, is that going to be a junior well or a senior water right well?
Oh, my
God. But if that's heavy surface water,
Well, here's the situation. The well was put in years and years ago before all this land activity occurred. So what's happening is, if you can imagine, she's kind of at the bottom of the hill.
Sure.
And there's all this development up here. And when Chris went out and talked to her, he said, you're not looking at this. This area that's being developed is not the issue. It's the area at the top of the hill. What they do at the top of the hill is going to be what is going to be going into her well. And imagine if the well is kind of like this, cone of depression. Whatever happens up here, it's going to go into that water. But her water's so shallow.
Yeah, all those dead wells, I thought they all turned into regular drilled wells. You get well,
what there is, there are other wells in the same area where her well is, but those are dug wells, and I don't know how deep they are.
Drilled wells?
Drilled wells.
Yeah.
They're junior water rights.
I think they're
what is
five acre lots.
What is a junior rock?
What is a junior water?
Well, it's basically, it's first in time, first in right. So if you came out in the 1880s and you plop that land, stick that land out, and you say, I'm going to drill a well, and it might be a hand dug well at that time. And then, and so you get that and say, okay, now I want to make a deeper well. You can drill it further so you get down to the water table. You just keep going, and so you have that senior water right. Now somebody else comes in behind you and wants to develop next to you, they are a junior water right. That's the way it works. And this works all the way from the time the county, the state was basically a state, and the time that all these wells went in. So the Department of Health at the state level and the Department of Public Works or Public Health, they have all these water right information, details. And so anybody, like I said, first in time. So if you came in at like the 1800s, 1900s, if you were the first one on that block, the first one in that area, you had your senior water right. If you come in afterwards, you have a junior water. And somebody comes in after you, they have a junior water right.
But that protects, wasn't part of that protection for agricultural purposes and...
Well, not necessarily. What it was protection for is to come
Western
in... When, it's Western Water Law, but basically...
It's the Western Water Law.
And so what happens is a lot of time when they were developing these areas, it was for basically cattle and livestock purposes because there wasn't no cities. So after the cities started being developed, then they switched more and more into senior water rights. And in fact, cities have municipal water rights which are superior in some cases to others. But they have to be careful because somebody like yourself, Gary, you could have a senior water right and they'd have to negotiate with you whether or not they could drill that well. So this has happened with Vancouver where they drill wells and they drill wells 500, 600, 800 feet deep. In some cases, it could have an impact on senior water right. So they have to be careful what they do and how they do it.
Suck all the water away from the senior.
Yeah, you know that in our local area, the county did an 800-foot well to go in, and it goes into the center. And on the way, then if anybody wanted a fire hydrant, it was only $150 to do that. So my people across the road did that. I've got it on my place. Very nice.
Yeah, and the thing in La Center, years ago, La Center ran out of water, and Clark Public Utilities was actually trucking water to La Center so they'd have domestic water for their purposes inside the city. And then they made a deal with Clark Public Utilities to drill a well so that they would have routine water.
800 feet.
Yeah.
Is it legal for, no, it sounds like, so the runoff up on the hill is feeding her domestic water system?
Could be.
Is that legal?
It's legal. I mean, it's just the nature, of the land.
The way it is, the land of the land.
That's a compromised water system.
Yeah, to say the least.
Well, and then her system in itself is compromised because it looks like it's pretty worn out.
Guess what?
It's pretty well worn out.
Oh. Okay. So it's not like her only real recourse is to attempt to drill a well.
I don't know.
But if she was talking to me. She calls about like once a week. She was talking to me. Like buffer, and how could she? Now she has to make things worse. The well is not on her property.
No, the well is away from her property.
It's on a neighbor's property.
Yeah.
Well, they're using for agricultural.
Let me just draw you a little picture.
So she's using what? Okay.
The water right is on an adjoining property.
There's a stream that comes.
And they probably don't care.
Well, now she's talking to me about putting like a 100-foot buffer around the stream.
She's right here. And this is going north. This is going north. This way. So north is that way. And this is the county that operates between us and Skamania County.
Oh, she's that far north.
She's that far east. This is north this way, so this is east this way.
Okay.
So this is east. So what's happening is some of the development that I'm talking about, and this is going uphill.
So it's east of the top of the hill?
Yes. So the east is this way, north is this way, south is this way. And there's a stream, I think it's a little Washougal or whatever it is.
Little Washougal River?
I think so. Anyways, so
okay.
There's a road that's going up here, the county road goes this way. And then there are properties going this way.
Those are the 5-acre lots,
yeah.
The mobile
lots. This one is already developed, so there's a really big house there. It's got its own system. This one here is in the process of being developed. And her parcel is right about here, the well, this hand-dug well. So then it travels on down here. We don't really know which way it goes, but we're just estimating it goes that way. So, and there's a property over here, which is her neighbor's. And so anyways, when you estimate, this is probably not exactly this, kind of goes like this. So we estimate, this is the neighbor, and this is the neighbor who's using it for domestic purposes, for basically irrigation and for cattle and livestock, and she's using it for drinking water purposes. And what she's complaining about is that in this area, there's a well already dug here, and there's another well dug here, and the area, all of the systems go down this way. That's the topography of your land. All right. And so with all that going on, all of this topography is there. So what you wind up with is this system where, and the house is being proposed here, and then there's a house being proposed here. So all that's going on. So with all that going on, then it becomes a case of, what does she do?
Wow.
Can I take a sec?
You're talking to her.
Hi, I just wanted to say hi and thank you for all the volunteer work that you do. I just love advisory boards.
Just for the record, Commissioner Vidor has stopped by to say a few words.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's okay.
On my way out, I'll say hi. I hope that you know you're appreciated. That's genuine. I really do appreciate you.
So when is the annual party?
Well, that'll come up soon, right? Anyway, I notice you. I appreciate you. I really appreciate it. You have my ear. You know how to reach me. I give my cell phone number to everybody. 601-3056. Everybody that left on my card. Anything to say? Anything to one commissioner? Anything off the top of your head?
Right now.
No, we're
stopping in.
We're gonna make a few alterations in some of our bylaws and so forth, try to be a little more timely in feedback and suggestions and interaction.
Well, I think also you're gonna be very pleased with the annual report that comes out.
Yes.
We've been productive and we have a plan for being proactive in 2015.
When I first got here, it was as though there were all these advisory boards out there somewhere and nobody knew where their websites were or, you know, how to reach them and who they were and that kind of thing. So you have a place on our county website now with all of the advisory boards. And what I didn't want to happen was for all of this important conversations that you're having and all the kind of things that you're sorting out somehow be like the person who's building a boat in their basement and they never launch it. So just know that your work counts, and the best way I know to count, for it to count, is make sure that staff will listen to you, the commissioners are interested and want to hear what you have to say, and if you've got anything that we can do to help you prosper better, be more effective, and somehow you got some ideas you want to be able to see if they go somewhere, I'm listening and welcome your feedback.
By the way, we've had fabulous staff support.
Great.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. They have absolutely fabulous.
$20.
That was good.
All right.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. Well, I apologize for interrupting you. It looks like you were just about you had just solved the problems of the universe right there.
Following up on something that was brought to one of the commission members.
Oh, great.
Yeah, the lady who's been appearing before in the hearings about the water and her well. And
oh, yes.
Okay. Anyway, that's what he was explaining.
Well, good, because I'm going to be going out there with my camping clothes on, tramping around there and taking measurements and getting a drawing to figure out who has jurisdiction over what and how do we make sure that she knows she's been listened to and maybe it doesn't fall into our jurisdiction to solve some of those problems. But somehow the government, at whatever level, is supposed to be, if there's anything that's not right there, let's do what we can to make it right. Some people, when they cry for help, they don't know how to express that or who to express it to, and we end up somehow thinking they don't know how. But we can translate that into find out what is wrong and is there a way we can help. So I'm glad you're interested. If you can shed any light on that, I'm all ears.
Well, our Commissioner Rasmussen has actually been in direct contact with a woman who approached her and is talking to her on a regular basis.
Well, good.
From an interaction standpoint.
I know how to reach Susan. Susan, if you want to be my source on this before I go out there and prime the pump and make sure I understand.
Well, Earl just said she's on the Skamania border, right? Because I was going to go out there and visit her, too. I didn't know she was that far out. She's way east out there. And I just didn't know this is so convoluted.
Yeah,
and
she's got the file this thick.
Yeah, I believe it.
When somebody's so invested in that much history, the danger is that they're going to want to make sure you know all that history. And the challenge is to boil it down to what are the root problems and how can we get you some relief in whatever area is tangible. So, if there is, yeah, there might not be, we don't know. But if the sorting out process is a challenge, because how do you wade through all that stuff? You really get down to what's the bottom line, how can we help? So Susan, I'll look to you to, I'll touch bases with you on that. So, thank you.
Perfect.
Appreciate it. Remember where you were before I started.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
So anyway.
So it's a mess.
Well, at least what you have here is think of this going uphill. So all this development's happening up here, and some of that development's happening across the border, so we have no control on any of that.
Like, what kind of slope is that? Is it, I mean, are we talking like steep slopes?
I've seen some pictures. I've not been out there, but I've seen some pictures of it. And it is steep, according to Chris. So.
Oh, yes, that hillside. What is that border that you're talking about?
This border here, this is Skamania County border.
Okay.
Is it forested? Are they woodlocked?
Well, we were talking about the buffers a while ago.
Yeah.
So there's a buffer right along the edge of this road, and there's a little stream that's in here too that runs around. And her pipe, if you will.
Yeah.
It's like right in the middle of the stream. So there's a stream that goes down here, goes around.
And where's her house at?
Her house is right here.
So that her pipe travels through
over 1,000 feet on the ground, on top of the ground.
On inside the stream too.
Well, what's there to protect it from wildlife?
Nothing.
Well, nothing. They could get giardia if you step.
Yes.
If an animal pooped there, they get giardia.
And then the neighbors have, they're running there, are they watering their cattle out of the stream?
Yeah, what they're doing is they're taking this water here. They're taking that water from that little shallow well, and they're using it to cattle. They got cattle out here, they water the cattle, water the acreage. She's using it for drinking water purposes.
So they have water rights too that stream?
Yeah, they have the same water rights.
That doesn't seem like the health department would sign off on that.
Well, I can't say what the health department is doing.
All
I can say is that hearings examiner studied all this material, and they have their information. Chris went out there and talked with her, got his information. Then it went up to the board during a discussion, because she comes to the board meetings. So anyways, this is my second-hand information from you. So anyways, my understanding is she's been to the board and to Chris, and I expect, like you heard Commissioner Bedore say, he's willing to go out there and see what her issue is. There's also another fellow who went out there and talked to her as well. But the problem is, she's so boisterous that they can't really explain stuff to her, and she's so emotional about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is private.
How has she been on the property?
She's been on this property, I don't know how many, dozens and dozens of years.
Dozens and dozens, but not necessarily.
And that's where you got to go out and peel the onions, so to speak, and find out what the core issue is.
It almost sounds like she's really, really, really looking for somebody to solve this problem.
She's looking for the county to solve the problem.
Which may or may not be feasible. Any other discussion? Any other issues before the commission?
This may be, I don't know, but can she... maybe no, it's a code issue. Is there a buffer on that stream at all?
There's a buffer on the stream, but the buffer is basically, if you
It may be a grandfathered in thing too, that, you know, all this system predated, you know, the codes, and
a lot of it is.
So it's all grandfathered.
So really the bottom line is
grandmothered, yes.
She basically dug a well in an area that there was no development. And I don't think anybody really anticipated any development. And so when they said we're gonna start partitioning these places into pieces of the property, the issue is now there's development here, there's development here, but no one really anticipated that until just a few years ago. And now it's been platted for each one of these. And like I said, this one here is already done. So if you ever go to the site, or if you look it up on the computer, you'll see some development proposal here. You'll see this one's finished. Again, there's a whole host of development all around the region. It's all over the place. And all of that stuff there is the kind of stuff that will trickle.
Yeah. So is there a PZ water line close by at all?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I do have a comment on that. Kind of relates to that in a sense. So the city of Richfield, and I actually called the developer, it was Pacific Lifestyles who did the development, I think. But so the comment, this buddy of mine, Andy Stephenson, all this water is running down on this place, right? They did this development in Richfield. And the comment from the city was, well, hey, water runs down here.
No.
Of course, this is the comment. It runs downhill.
There's a certain logic with it.
Well, there is a certain logic to it. There's a lot of sympathy there, too.
But the
problem is, as we deal with stormwater and things like that, so they built a development of all these impervious surface, all these patios and everything. I've already shared this once, but it's the same type of situation. So there is cause and effect. So what they created up there did damage to his property. His solution was basically, this guy, all he really wanted was a French drain put in, divert this water away from my gravel driveway so it doesn't keep washing up and be happy, you know, which they did after, you know, it was like, hey, this guy just wants this fixed. Why are you creating this? You've got hardscape all over the place with inadequate stormwater facility. And you know anything about
so
that?
So did the developer put that French drain in?
The developer came down and put the French drain in. They had their landscape guy, who was a contractor, I wanted to do it, but, always out for a buck. But the guy who does their landscape up there cut a French drain in and semi-repaired the problem and diverted the water underneath the road. But you still have technically polluted water coming off of this development. It's not technically, it is polluted to a certain extent. Running out there and filtering through the field a little bit, going over there. But that's where the city of Richfield was at on it.
Not great sympathy.
And they reserved no spot on this hillside for a stormwater facility. There's none.
Great planning, too.
But that's where they're... See, that's when you hear... phase one, phase two?
We're phase one.
So that's the difference.
And then Richfield does not even have phase two.
They're not phase two because they're too small. Yes. This is where I get into swamp stuff on us working together and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're not even, they don't even have to follow that.
They're following a 1992 manual.
You can build in Richfield and you don't even have to build it.
Is it in the city limits that they did that?
Absolutely. Outside the city limits is Clark County, unincorporated Clark County.
Yeah. But anyways, they're trying to do their best. But the bottom line is that the bottom line is they don't have to follow the same rigorous criteria that we do.
At all. That's a problem.
Yes. So, you mean I live in Clark County and tough luck, huh?
Well, Clark County's tougher than the city of Richfield.
Because we're as phase one, phase two, and not having to follow any of it. And that happens all over the state.
Well, so right now what we have in Clark County, there's Clark County as a phase one. Vancouver, surprisingly, is a phase two. Battleground, phase two. Camas, a phase two. Washougal, a phase two.
Less stringent.
So, and then there, it's less stringent on the one hand, but basically what it is, they put their system in later. The requirements are for them to do stuff is later than it is for us. And they don't have to do as much monitoring as we do, which is surprising.
I didn't realize it was that much.
Well, that's things that we need to be educated on, too. Because I knew it was, but it's like, when you think this is a countywide, well, break the city, you can break Richfield out of it. Here you can have a whole city create a stormwater issue for any outlying area in the county. Big problem.
Anything else? Going once?
I have nothing that requires action tonight, but it kind of, Jeff, your comment about the not really knowing what we did and the fact that North County thinks differently than us urban folk. Just got me thinking. I don't know, but that's what we hear. Is there any, and this is a question for all, is there anything in our bylaws that says that maybe once or twice a year we can take this commission on the road?
Okay, I'll go.
In the land before time. we were a traveling show.
Now bear in mind that.
We were hopscotching all around the county, every month.
And we tried that. I'll tell you what happened, and Susan and others can back me up on this. We went to a variety of locations. We went to Yakola, we went to Amboy, we went to places like La Center, we went to Ridgefield, we went to Camas, we went everywhere. And what was most interesting, when we went out to like the La Center area, we had a fellow who used to be on the commission.
Willie Burlett.
And he was what he called himself the mayor of View or something like that.
Yeah, View is a nice little place.
And so anyhow,
guy.
It was funny because nice guy and stuff. He was the only person who was in the audience, seriously. And we have taken that show to colleges, we've taken it to to high schools, we've taken it to police stations, everywhere.
And it
wouldn't really matter. And so while I appreciate the rural view, I can tell you right now, the rural view, and I've known this for since when I started working at the county, we had a person who was basically doing surveys for us. And I told the guy, I want a visual survey. I want to be able to have maps, charts, and things I can give to people so they can visually see the difference in the attitude, not just some numbers on a chart, but make a visual. And he did. And one of the first things he said, you're going to find that North County is going to be different than Vancouver, and Vancouver is going to be different than East County. So you have all these people in these various areas, but when we talked about that stuff, the bottom line was they're going to have different views, and they will have different views. Even today, they have different views. Like I mentioned earlier, if I walk out to say Yakult or Shalashi Prairie, I'm going to get a far different response to what this clean water program is about than I will if I walked downtown Vancouver or over to Camas.
Well, that's okay, but my concern would be is that if we take the time and effort to go out and go there and nobody shows up, then it kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah. So we did that for several, about 10 years with that?
We did that for a long time. And then Tom brought it to our attention that he was having trouble locating and finding us for that month. So he was like we were playing hide and seek with him. So we decided to stay put here.
You should probably go
a
little about that.
Yeah, and I appreciate the thought. So.
It's a nice
thing. But maybe it's worth revisiting and trying, once a year or something to get feedback. And again, it gives us an opportunity. It's an education opportunity also. And to spread goodwill, because we are going to be increasing those fees. So,
any other topics?
If you guys wanted to start somewhere like educational, I know Clark College does a lot of environmental things. They have presentations.
I made a note here too. We'll check them out.
You just contact them. And,
maybe they'll love to have guest speakers.
They do have lots of them. So.
Yeah. Okay, super. Any other business before the commission?
Thanks for explaining that, Earl.
No, that's my rudimentary understanding of it.
Seeing no further business before the commission, then we shall entertain a motion to wrap the meeting.
I make a motion to wrap up.
Do I have a second?
Sure.
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Meeting for December 3rd, 2014 for the Clean Water Commission of Clark County is closed.
All right.
Yes, could you, your sheet? Yes, I would appreciate that.
Have a Merry Christmas, everybody.
You too.
Well, I just figured. people would probably be more comfortable if they jot it down and
go out and explain this.
Okay, the email, if you would.